Cambridge Breakfast with Julian Clover and Lucy Malazzo.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
A Cambridge University study has identified 275 ways to reduce transmission of coronavirus. The study was led by Professor William Sutherland from the University's Department of Zoology. I'm pleased to say Professor Sutherland is on the line now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us. There seems to have been talk the last few days in particular with this debate as to if and when the lockdown was going to be, I think eased is probably a better word, but it seems to me that the talk is just as much about getting the economy going as it is about keeping people safe, which is what it was at the start of the conversation. Do you see it that way as well?
I see that we have to achieve some sort of balance, and that's a political decision that we're not discussing that sort of thing. What we're interested in doing is to say, if you do decide to leave lockdown, then what is a sensible way of doing that?
And that's where we get to these 275 ways, really, of things, I guess, that, well, many of them, we can all do. The obvious ones, which I'm presuming are on the list, are the washing hands and standing 2 metres apart. But what else is included on the list?
Well, so the issue of physical spacing, which seems to be absolutely critical, how actually can you achieve that? What are the sensible ways of getting that done? And we provide about 125 different ways in which you can do that, from measures for keeping the number of people in a place, a supermarket, a doctor, surgery, etc., at a below a maximum level. You can have apps, you can have slotted times, you can have different people going in according to their surname or their car registration number if it's somewhere you drive to. There's a whole range of different ways in which you can try to produce that physical spacing.
I guess somewhere, if I'm thinking about it here, somewhere like a supermarket, well, supermarkets, obviously they come in different sizes, but presumably there's some sort of calculation that you can make that if a particular supermarket is so many square feet large, then you would only have up to whatever number of people it is to fit into that space. And if you do that, there's a reasonable chance that they can all keep at least 2 metres apart with a bit of thought.
Yeah, absolutely. But then how do you achieve that? So one suggestion is the sort of app that we have that tells us how crowded the roads are. You could have apps that tell you how crowded the shops are, so you decide when to avoid them. You could have apps that tell you book a space, and then it tells you when your space is available. So there's a whole range of different ways of solving
yes.
that.
I guess it's not necessarily within your remit, but experience with online shopping would suggest as soon as any spaces come up, people come and nab them. So you need some sort of mechanism in there, I guess, in order to make sure that any spaces are evenly distributed.
Absolutely. And a lot of this is, we've got psychologists as part of the team, is to think about ways in which that might work. Mm. So another example is how do you limit the congestion in parks? So we rather tragically have shut down some London parks because they were so congested. Are there other ways of doing that, such as you walk to on the pavement on the right-hand side, you go around clockwise, there's a separate entrance and exit way. They shut down the park benches and the drinking fountains. They have a gate that you don't have to touch with your hand, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. So although it isn't quite an enjoyable experience, it is reasonably safe and so could be opened earlier in the transition than if we're going to open it and it just became congested again. It would probably be high risk and would probably not open it for some time.
Yeah, I noticed another one on your list. You said suggesting that patients with doctor's appointments could wait in their car outside the surgery until called in. And I need to go to the chemist today to go and pick up a prescription for myself. And I can imagine, you know, it's just the thought of hanging around in a small chemist shop whilst waiting for an everyday prescription doesn't necessarily seem to be a sensible idea.
Absolutely. So that would work if it's somewhere that people usually drive to, I suspect you may well walk to your chemist.
Walk or cycle would be my option, I think.
Yeah, so you'd have a facility whereby it would give you sort of 10 minutes warning as to when your slot is ready.
Yeah, school is another one, I guess. And your suggestion to split the classes into smaller groups with dedicated teachers. So is it like one week on, 1 week off, something like that?
So what we're saying is that if we move to... we could just move to normality, but if we move to normality, there's likely to be a second wave of infection, and then we have to go back to lockdown again. And that is one possible way of doing it. The other way that we think we should explore is that we move to some conditions that are stringent, they're sort of less attractive, but they're safer. And if you think about schools, as you say, you could have it so pupils go to school every second or third week, so there's lower numbers. They're in a cohort so that, if you like, they've basically got their own individual school. So that group of students has one teacher who are with them all the time. They're always in that classroom. They have staggered starting and leaving times and break times so they don't meet the other cohorts. They have their own washing facilities and drying and eating facilities. So they're surviving separately from the other groups. And is that sort of process something that we want to consider and will be acceptable? That's all we're saying, is that we think we should have that debate.
Yes. So I guess your role, if you like, is to say, right, well, this is what you could do, and then you have to leave. I guess it is a political decision after that, almost as much as a medical and health decision as to what steps society should do in order to get things back to something vaguely resembling normality.
Absolutely. I don't for a minute think that the government is going to regulate on all of these fine details, but that so chemists could get together and say, what is the safe way of running chemist shops in the short term? That means we could open a bit more, but ensure that we're safe. And then over time, we'll move to sort of something closer to normality.
Something we carried on the news at 9 o'clock, I don't know if you heard, this is the suggestion from the London Mayor, Sadiq Khan, to make face masks compulsory on public transport. I don't know if you heard the clip, but basically he said, and I'm sure you'll be well familiar with the argument, it's not so much about stopping you catching it yourself, but making sure that you don't give out the droplets and the rest in order to stop other people from catching it. I wonder if that sort of thing makes your list at all.
We do. So we want to stay neutral on the on recommendations.
Yes, of course.
That is a recommendation of many authorities. And so we do have various options for wearing face masks. So you can make it suggested. You can make it legal in town. Some places have it so that you're given a face mask when you enter the building. And there are a range of ways in which you could increase the use of face masks.
Mm. And is there, within the list, are there ones which you might say are the heavier items that one might do immediately after a lockdown is eased, and then you drop a few off the list as time moves on and hopefully the numbers being infected with this disease falls?
Absolutely. So one of the things we talk about is what we call resilient normality, which is to say, what might the world be like at the end, where we sort of are getting on with our lives, and hopefully we've got a vaccine and, you know, it's not a big issue. But what are the ways in which we can make ourselves more resilient to the next pandemic? So obvious examples would be, do we really want to be touching communal doors with our hands, or do we normally want to find other ways so that you can use your feet or your elbow in order to get in? Are there ways in which we could, we're doing more hand washing, are there ways in which we can have that more normalized by society? Mm. Ways in which we can do more work from a distance? And those sorts of things might mean that we're less vulnerable to future pandemics.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I have to ask, which struck me, now you're within the Department of Zoology. That's ridiculous. I automatically think of zoology is going to be animals, but this is this is more moving into just as much as, I guess, human behaviour as much as anything else.
Well, yeah, that's right. And it does initially seem a bit peculiar. But one of the things that we do is we're interested in collating the evidence on conservation. And we've devised this process called solution scanning, which is to list all the possible options in a given area. And that's the approach we're doing here. Okay. There's also a program called Biosecurity Research Initiative at St. Catherine's College, BioRisk. And I lead that. And that's very much about looking at biorisk, biosecurity issues. And finally, there's the third partner in this is the Center for the Study of Existential Risk, which I'm also heavily involved in. So it's bringing those different components together. And we have a lot of expertise on dealing with these sorts of problems.
Well, really interesting to talk to you this morning. Thank you very much for joining us. Interesting study. I must presume if we go online, we can see all 275 ways, can we?
You can. There's if you go to the BioRisk with a C website, you should be able to find your way there.
I might do that and check off and see if there's a few. Cause I guess there's a few everyday things that we can all do, which will which maybe haven't necessarily got the national publicity on all of these things.
Absolutely. Okay. And let me know if you. There's an email there when we're looking. So we see this as an initial stage. We want this to be an open discussion. In fact, I mentioned it on Twitter and got another 8 or so suggestions and acknowledged those in the paper. And we're very keen to, and we have a list on the BioRisk website that we will keep going and update as other people make suggestions.
Well, we should speak again when it touches 500 then, in which case. Professor Sutherland, thank you very much for joining us this morning. That's Professor William Sutherland is from the Cambridge University Department of Zoology on that study of the 275 ways to reduce transmission of coronavirus. Cambridge 105 Radio.